Item 6C, community development. We're going to discuss groundwater permitting guidelines.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. Rick Dean, Community Development Director. Just want to ask Mr. Matt Parker to join in this conversation. This is regarding the permitting guidelines for groundwater wells in the County of Siskiyou. And for the record, I just want to make it clear that we're not asking for any action today on this. This is the draft guidelines. We've been directed to take the draft guidelines to the GSA advisory groups and come back and report to you guys with our findings. So as part of the agenda here, basically we'll go through groundwater permitting guidelines. You've seen it many times over. We'll just go through that quickly. And we'll move on to the presentation from the public. It's basically the feedback we got, map it together, comments and so forth that we received. We'll just have a conversation, let you know what their concerns were, and discuss them as appropriate. Have a little brief discussion about current legislation, and then finally ask for some board direction.
Through the chair quickly before you go down that. On the agenda worksheet, it says that we move to take the following action, and I just heard that we're not taking action, so what are we doing?
Direction. I'm sorry. I should strike that term action. Change it with direction.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. A bit of background. Obviously, we're dealing with basically three different things here. Governor's order. Are well aware of. We've been having a lot of discussions about that as far as the drought and so forth. Still is in place, and the farmers were tasked to permit things. Also, the GSPs, their involvement through the governor's order, basically review all of our permit applications associated with production wells. And then lastly, we have a public trust argument, of course, that we're still concerned with in the Scott and the Shasta Valley basins.
Quick question.
Yes, sir.
Does the executive orders apply to all counties in California?
Yes, it does.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
As you well know, we have our basins throughout the county for and the associated GSAs. So it's this county flood control district is over certain Shasta, the Scott, and Butte Valley basins. The Tule Lake basin is a bit more complicated. This board of supervisors serving as a GSA, and alongside with the Tule Lake Irrigation District, the County of Modoc, and also the City of Tule Lake. As we've had many discussions about prior to non-production wells, basically anything that's less than 2 acre-feet per year falls into that category. So what is not for review, subject to GSA review, are those domestic wells, essentially, not subject to the ground, to the governor's order. But however, they are subject to the standard public trust findings for the Shasta and Scott Valley basins. Next slide is coming up here at some point in time.
So the public trust finding is for both Scott and Shasta?
Yes. You're right. So the other basins really don't have a public trust, you know, waterway and navigable associated with them, so it's all focused on. Scott,
Jason. Back one. Public water system is not subject to GSA review. And I'd also say that neither are the adjudicated areas within those basins.
It's not specified in the governor's order to that effect.
I get what you're saying on that, but yeah. Our GSA does not review adjudication in areas that are adjudicated. We were specifically told by SIGMA not to include those areas.
Yeah. I refer to council on that, because also we have a requirement to ensure that adjacent wells are not affected when issuing the well permit, which I think probably falls in adjudication and also badly clarification.
The comments you've made about the governor's order not specifying, you know, a different procedure for adjudicated wells is correct to my recollection, but I can look more closely at the interplay of that.
Okay.
Just one other question. Is there an expiration date on the governor's order?
From memory, I believe it's when he rescinds it. I don't believe it had an expiration.
Could that's been our conversation was once recently at some point in time.
Continue on.
Good. All right. So essentially, we have to go through the process of making determinations before any well permits are issued. Starting out with the governor's order. Portion 9A, which requires the GSA to basically review those permits and make sure they're compatible with the GSPs, essentially. Other determination, as just previously mentioned there a second ago, is any potential effects on existing wells, making sure that they are likely or not likely to interfere with their production or ability to function, functionality. Another determination associated with Governor's Order 9B, specifically the Two Lake Basin now is somewhat of a concern because there's been some subsidence identified there, which may be more problematic for us in the future to deal with. Just pointing that out.
But I think there's a different definition of what you just described. Know that it's subsidence due to groundwater recharge. I think it's a subsidence due to dewatering that system.
Right, and that's our interpretation, which I completely agree with. However, the Department of Water Resources guidelines are a bit more sticky and specify that we have to basically prove that.
I think the proof is what we're seeing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it'll be something to navigate. We'll just put it there and leave it at that right now.
I don't want to be argumentative. I keep coming back to this executive order and that the way I would read it, maybe it's just me. If you go back to the first statement, that you be consistent with the GSP, anything within the adjudication is consistent with the GSP, so we didn't consider it in the GSP. It's not an all-inclusive statement.
Hmm. We'll leave that to the flood control district to
leave that to the attorney. But I can't believe that he hasn't been counseled that he can't step into state law and re-describe it.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, it's a big deal to me.
Yeah, for sure. I get it. And we'll deal with those individually as it comes through the flood control district for maybe approval.
Yeah, I'll talk about this.
In the adjudication zone.
When you get done.
Right.
I did. I think, Mr. Chair. I appreciated what you said about the Two Lake Basin. The definition of subsidence, of course, and different soil type, lake bed, all those sorts of factors. Without the, with the lack of surface water over there, the higher end of that soil is dealing with what it's dealing with. So I appreciated your response. And I think that's an example of when we look at the state, one size fits all doesn't necessarily fit everything that we're dealing with. Each area has its uniqueness, and that's why we're having this, our local GSAs.
Yeah, and I'll just add on the Water Board website, they have now identified subsidence in Siskiyou County on the map there.
Right.
And just going back to the years, it's like come and gone. It was in Modoc County for a while, was identified as subsidence occurring that somehow went away. That's moved over to Siskiyou County. So it's there in the public. It's on the map.
All right.
It's identified. So at any rate, we're going to have to deal with it.
All right. Okay. I'll stop there. Okay.
Okay. And then the final determination there is obligation to consider the public trust, as mentioned there. If we evaluated to the extent feasible applies, yes or no, basically. So those are the four primary determinations that we have to make prior to issuing any well permit for a production well.
Quick question, go back one. I'm going to hit the number three again. You're saying potential issue with two lake basin, but groundwater recharge is part of Sigma in our plan.
Correct.
And when there's a dewatering effect that takes place, how does that apply to post well?
I'm not sure I understand your question entirely. As far as recharge basins go, right, if there is water stained essentially on a specific property and the well's application is presented for that property, we can take a look at that as a net zero conversation to potentially issue that well permit.
A lot of that system depends on the project being water. By dewatering the project, regulation is actually creating the very problem that you're trying to deal with. Mm-hmm. So where do we reconcile that?
Sir, Mr. Parker, jump right on in.
Good morning, Matt Parker, Natural Resources. How I think it's the way to look at this situation, regardless of where the blame comes from, is that Sigma is requiring the same sort of accounting for subsidence in the Central Valley and San Joaquin Valley, where essentially the same thing has happened, where surface water deliveries were pulled because of whatever reason, and groundwater was pumped more, causing subsidence in that part of California. This is essentially what's happening to the lakes. We can kind of pass the blame however we wish. Sigma is still requiring GSAs to account for subsidence. However, the cause of it was happened. So it's to support Rick, it's just something too late in the GSA that have to deal with.
Mr. Chair, I know one thing Till Lake has done on that, Till Lake Irrigation District, is the GSA plan for that area. It's Lost River, flowing the Lost River down there, still draining it out of the basin, flowing it down for groundwater recharge. It was fairly substantial this last year, where they flowed down part of the plan.
Yeah. Definitely a cause and effect there. Ultimately, though, it'll have to be in the decision chain to deal with the portion of permits. And quite frankly, it's from the subsidence of the high school, right, that made the whole big conversation come to light. Associated infrastructure. So potentially, there would be a zone outside of that high school area directly that won't have an issue. Unless I just pointed out that it's a thing. All right? Okay. Next slide. This is just basically anything that we have that is not ministerial and goes through a discretionary decision process is subject to CEQA. This has been pointed out by ELF quite frequently and most recently as well. So something that we have to be cognizant of and working closely with council to make sure that we don't get ourselves in trouble through this process. Next slide, quickly, please. Yeah. This is just part of the flow part, flow charts that are within the draft EIR or the draft permitting application process with their associated checklist. So the Scott and also the Shasta have every portion, every decision-making process there listed. And we can just click through this quickly. to have basically the same setup for each basin. So this is all part of our draft permit application process. All right, so we'll get on to the meat and the potatoes. Mr. Matt Parker, Haley Lane, also Dan Wessel attended the meetings that were prescribed with the GSA review committees to basically discuss their concerns regarding the draft permitting standards. Just note that Sky Valley and also the Butte Valley farms were not full during those meetings. We will move on to comments. The committee's expressed that they wanted to see the draft revisions come back to them again. Also, it will be posted on the website there. Mr. Parker. Okay, next, please.
Where'd you go? I'm right here. I can take over if you want.
Okay. Yeah. That's your baby right there. We'll have a discussion relative to these concerns.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Again, Matt Parker, Natural Resources. So just to back up real quick, as you remember, in February we met, got direction, or you gave staff direction to take this item to our groundwater advisory committees as well as the Tule Lake GSA. We held meetings with the Tule Lake core team in March of this year and the advisory committees in April. We are fortunate enough to have our facilitation team provided by DWR to take very good notes in all four of these meetings. They were kind enough to summarize these, and then we put these in the presentation slides in front of you. So these comments are not, I guess, direction or recommendations from the staff. This is just simply what was stated in these meetings that we're sharing with you to provide discussion format for you. The facilitators did a good job of summarizing the different categories. We heard a lot of good feedback. We tried to be very clear about why we're in this sort of topic situation. We had the governor's order, as we've laid out, CEQA requirements, and public trust. And so we had to do quite a bit of education with the committees on why kind of the guidelines were drafted the way they were. I think we were able to make that clear, and then got really good feedback from the committees. Most of the comments were pretty much what we expected, nothing surprising or unexpected. And so this first item, I'm not going to read all three bullet points, but I think the takeaways are is that there's a very strong desire from the community, and this spreads across the three committee basins as well as Tule Lake, is to have as many exemptions or straightforward approvals as possible that's allowed with the governor's order, etc. Flexibility for wells, such as conjunctive use actions or efficiency in terms of water management. And then also, folks saw this as a way using the GSPs to keep the basins in check, in that with GSPs coming online, improved data collection, we're going to know better how our groundwater is reacting to droughts and rainy winters, etc. And so this will be another way to just improve our monitoring and understanding of groundwater in our basins. So next slide, and we can stop there.
Just to address part of the concerns there, as far as weeding down to a smaller sphere of requirements, one aspect that we can definitely do and incorporate into the draft would be to develop a matrix specifically for zero net impact, essentially. So you could issue a well permit ministerially, provided that there's no further consumptive use on that particular situation with that proposed well. So as Supervisor Cobb mentioned, developing retention basins specifically. So if, for example, a property owner has built a retention pond and is contributing X back into the aquifer and going to dig out a net zero effect from a well, that would be something that we could probably do ministerially through the matrix. If we're going to boil things down any further, though, we're definitely going to need to be looking at a program EIR countywide and do some specific identification, delineation of the public trust doctrine area specifically, and try to exclude wells for review for that outside of that area. Right now, it's very broad. It's either in Scott Valley Basin or it's in Shasta Valley Basin, and it is taking in effect the whole basin. Every single well is scrutinized. We go through the process and actually narrow that down and identify that, then we could maximize the ministerial aspect of well permitting.
So, Greg, if I could, you know, you mentioned, I hope you don't mean narrowing it down, you mean the process itself. This should be applied countywide.
Yeah, absolutely, countywide.
Right, because I don't want to have to go through another process, basin gets added or something, you know. We're going to get sued because of X out here. So we're looking at it, and I appreciate that, countywide perspective.
Yeah, and with the public trust doctrine piece, I was just primarily focused on Shasta and Scott.
Well, that may be the driver, but we're going to look at this for our
purposes.
Yeah,
it would be entirely
countywide.
For sure. Yeah. As well as the adoption of the draft. So just generally speaking, we want to maximize the ministerial aspect of well permitting and minimize the CEQA part of it. And really the only way to drill that down is to go through program EIR countywide and make some assumptions for zones, both for public trust review and also for impact to adjacent wells. Okay.
Keep the basin in check.
Yeah, this is just a draft example of the matrix that we could do on including to the draft that would basically maximize the ministerial part of it, where essentially it's all based on a net zero impact. We can prove that out through a checklist internally, and we can issue those permits ministerially.
So the next sort of subtopic is just a little more detail regarding different well situations, you know, replacing a well, emergency wells. And so the comments we received across the board was we need clarity in the guidance document on manners to avoid CEQA, to replace a well, you know, provide exemptions on how that can easily be done in a situation where it's not going to be a substantial or zero, or basically stay the same in terms of groundwater extraction. So just to summarize, just a strong desire to see better clarity on this part of the guidance document. So, next slide.
So. I'll just say for the most part, we addressed this with the matrix previously, on how to identify that and basically minimize the CEQA aspect of the well permitting process. Emergency replacement wells, those are, you know, basically no-brainers, things that we can do ministerially. Depth and diameter, again, as long as we don't have any further consumptive use, we should be able to quickly issue those permits.
Regarding in the executive order, there's language about using a certified hydrogeologist. There was a lot of various concerns from the group. One is clarity on what that means and who is considered that in terms of a professional. You know, there's concerns that there's none of these types of folks available or readily available in the county. You know, point two is that many of these professionals, I'll just say,
they may not subject themselves to this sort of liability to put a stamp of approval on a well. There's the obvious cost of these using these professionals. And then what happens when somebody challenges that professional determination? And then, you know, there was a lot of input regarding could the county find alternative means to substitute using a professional to cover, you know, that sort of review under the executive order and the language in the guidance document. You know, examples such as geologists might be easier to find, as well as utilizing the models in the particular basin. So lots of input on this report.
Just to touch on that, you know, basically, if you look through the verbiage that the state provides, they refer to a licensed professional. Generally speaking, a strict geologist does not have the hydrological expertise to evaluate situations. And just internally, that's kind of where we have gone, is a geologist with a certification in hydrology, basically, to address these issues. Expensive, yes. This is very problematic for sure. Again, if we could address some of this through the program EIR, and establish zones based on geology, based on studies that we have with Dr. Harder and so forth, for setback requirements, right? So you could basically identify a zone based on the porosity, the characteristics of the aquifer, and have a set setback for wells within that zone. Then we could issue those permits quickly. We wouldn't have to go through the hydrogeologist for those particular situations. The more egregious ones, we'd have to do that, or else fall back on modeling from Dr. Harder and somehow pay for all that stuff. Things to think about.
A few other comments we received regarding the guidance document was concerns about not addressing some of the legal uses, meaning accounting for that. And then also, there was an interesting conversation, particularly in the Shasta Valley, is that there was a level of concern regarding eventual or potential increase in subdivisions. Or large residential growth. I think there's examples out there that folks use that they felt should be compared in the same manner as agricultural or other production uses, and that everybody should be in the same evaluation pool and not separated because of residential or subdivision or production, etc. In the next slide, Rick will address those.
Just in regard to that conversation, recall a resolution that was passed by the board specifically for Scott Valley, where we basically made the determination that domestic residential wells are de minimis. And with regard to that, I certainly would not be on board comparing the residential, even at the subdivision level, with agricultural use, and primarily because 87 to 90% of that water is utilized by residential subdivisions and so forth, is re-injected back into the aquifer. We don't have that case with agricultural. Right? Also, the agricultural use is much more significant than the residential use. Just generally speaking, common sense-wise, I wouldn't go to that degree and compare the two together or even deal with them the same.
Question.
Yes, sir.
So as regulation forces production land, ag land, out to the point of subdividing into subdivisions, do we have any information that gives us the ability to say what the consequence of that would be? So if you've got a 1,000-acre production land that's using ag land, but now, because of regulation, the individual says, I've had it, I'm not going down the regulation path, I'm going to sell out, but we're going to subdivide before I go. And now that 1,000-acre parcel is going to have, what do we have, 2.5-acre minimum. So you're going to have several hundred now residents on it. What's that impact look like versus the current use? Or do we know?
I can speak generally to that if you're talking about water usage.
Just residential.
I mean, so I would just put it in this framework. 1,000-acre parcel. Right, your agriculture use is going to be basically 3 acre feet per year,
okay,
on that water.
Okay,
your residential use is going to be 240 gallons per acre based on our density standard
per year,
per day.
Okay.
Yeah, do the quick math on that, it's not in my brain right now, but it's significantly less
than the 3 acre
then.
So, I don't know. I've heard contrary to that, and that's what I'm curious about.
Yeah. But the larger factor here is that water will be re-injected back into the aquifer. 87% for, studies that are pretty dynamic with that. It's done. Dr. Peterson mentioned 90% during our Interview Orchard Camp conversation.
So then I guess the question would be, on the landscape of rural Siskiyou County, 1,000-acre parcel being turned into what they did up in Phoenix and Medford, where now it's butt-to-butt housing.
Yeah.
Is that what we're trying to get to?
That's not a goal of mine or ours, I don't think. This might be the goal of the state of California.
With respect to that, I know it's nitpicking, but something not part of that discussion is that once you convert from ag land to urban, you also increase runoff and reduce infiltration, which affects groundwater usually. And that is a significant change in the water balance equation. Just the consumption piece.
It changes the whole dynamic for certain.
I don't see 1,000 acres going into 2.5-acre parcels anytime soon. I think you want to get these little subdivisions picked off, and maybe down the line have more cumulative effect.
Well, no, I hear what you're saying, but I'm saying regulation is beginning to force a different use of the land.
I have a small one for sale right now on Moffett Creek. It's about the dog's property. Changed from Ag 1 to Ag 2 or rural residential about 3 or 4 years ago, and now the sale sign on development.
Yeah.
I think, and I know in regards to the ag water, just to get it out there, if it goes over the ground, it's not necessarily wasted. I mean, it goes back into the upper recharge and the carbon sequestration, it goes into a great deal of benefits as well. The ag water that gets pumped on. The one thing I'd like to see is not necessarily at this level, be more planning. I think in the past, I don't know what the rules are, what the models are from other areas, so going off a little bit on the subject here, more for planning. It seems like areas have been subdivided for lots that quite frankly weren't going to produce water for housing. I think some of this should be considered in subdivisions that the people, they buy their 2.5-acre lot or 5-acre, whatever, has been subdivided. There's some soil types in those areas where they have to go maybe 600 feet to find water. Is it really fair for the market or the best use for that ground? I'll stop there with that.
Yeah.
So is everyone okay?
The whole 1,000-acre into subdivision thing is just, I mean, we're going to change the whole landscape of things. And I'm not sure that the water use changes. And it, Yeah, I mean, we've already discussed it.
Sure. I mean, all you got to do is look back at some of our past practices where we subdivided the land. I think Shasta Vista, where there's no water, and we did it. Are you going to do it now? I mean, it's going to have to go through a planning process, and I would like to think that county planning commissioners are following what's going on because they'll be dealing with this on some level. Where are we at with this, Rick?
A few more slides.
A couple more slides?
Sorry. The last bit of feedback we received, I guess, relates to Supervisor Copsa's question about how to evaluate. And there was a strong desire from the community to use, expanded, better technology in these assessments using the models. I think models are getting better, especially in Scott Valley, where you could actually evaluate the impacts of a converting to a 1,000-acre residential community. I think we did, if I recall, I feel like Scott Valley, Dr. Harder's done that sort of back of the envelope calculation. But that could be used as a tool for that evaluation. You know, other tools such as satellite imagery or the open ET format, potentially using the groundwater conditions based on the annual reports as a measurement for approving or not approving new permits, and feedback regarding could the GSPs be used to determine a cap, sort of a max build-out. This is all kind of feedback we received from the various communities. Stop there.
Well, these are all primarily GSA, GSP conversations. I don't have a lot of comment on technology piece.
I'll talk about legislation.
Sure.
So this is a moving target right now. So we have the governor's order in place. There's four bills out there right now that are in process that may or may not come to fruition by January 24th. The primary one is Senate Bill 1563, which essentially it mirrors the governor's order. Some things within it that are a bit concerning. It requires the licensed professional to do evaluations. One thing that is on the good side, perhaps, is that it's specific to critically overdrafted basins only. So potentially, if this were to replace the governor's order, it may give us a bit more latitude here in Siskiyou County, which would be the hope.
I would say only temporarily.
Yeah. Also on the docket, and these are from Bill Bennett, he's got AB 2201, which is a groundwater extraction permit verification process. Still, it's basically in line with what we're doing now. It requires that every permit application is publicly made available for review via internet prior to the issuance of the permit, which is added fun. Also, AB 429 is out there, which essentially ties in, again, with the critically overdrafted basins. The determination is made that 1% of the domestic wells go dry, then basically all the regulations are cinched up and much more scrutiny in place. And lastly, 540. Comes around to adjudication being more scrutinized, requiring the courts to confer with the water board prior to decisions being made. That's kind of the summary of the litigation that's out there. It could potentially impact how our draft guidelines are finalized. So with that, I'll leave it open to discussion on the board. And get some direction specifically regarding indemnification agreements, if they want us to proceed with those or not, and also regarding the program EIR conversation. I want to move forward with that.
Okay, so Mr. Chris, where are you with any of this?
For me, I'm happy that we sent off the GSAs for the feedback. I think that was a good move that you guys did to take that back and get the feedback. This is a question for some of the public. What's the process moving forward in regards to this becoming finalized? Just streamlined so people know what that process is and any chance for feedback. I mean, the fear that everybody has is that government tomorrow will pass something and be stuck with it. So there's comfortableness in what the process is that moves forward. For example, public comment in the field. Do you have a chart on that or something that we could share, or just so people know what that process is?
Okay.
And then does it go back to the GSA's advisories again, or do you feel we have enough feedback to move forward without going back to them again?
Right. The GSA specifically asked us to take it back to them?
They did. Okay.
Yes, they did. So moving forward, I don't have a chart for you how that's all set up, and it will be hand in hand with council on how to move forward with that, because it's problematic for mitigation purposes, obviously too, right? So right now, what we plan to do is basically revise the draft based on these comments that we have, and kind of get that more tightened up. And then also we need to ferret out the conversation moving forward the program EIR regarding our groundwater countywide. And if we do that, then it will be subject to public hearing and hopefully be involved with that whole process.
All right. I guess the conclusion, it's not going to be passed tomorrow and we have to live with the content. People have to
No, we're not there yet.
Well, looking at the question you asked for the pending legislation, I think it's just our lobbyists and our legislators trying to educate those in Sacramento about different things. For example, we talked about it earlier too, like it's just different when it comes to the definition of subsidence. I am, for the program EIR, I am interested in, it was one of the first bullet points you had up there, for those areas that could be handled, I'll use the word ministerially, there's not an impact. Doesn't take as much staff time to make that more streamlined in areas that have to be, so adequate staff time can be given for those areas that where there is a potential threat somewhere that can be fully analyzed for the protection of the county and also for the protection of those of the landowners there, the vulnerable. It's something that I think we should be doing. We just don't have the staff to give in-depth study to every particular spot everywhere. Programmatic in the ER, we can kind of prioritize what we need to do, kind of like triage or like you do every day in your office.
Right. And then it's the other big factor too is the cost of the studies, right?
Yeah.
If that's put on every single applicant, it's just it's not good.
Yeah. And then for the licensed professionals, I'm receptive to the idea of geologists. Who's the other one certified?
Hydrogeologist.
Be interested for me to see what other GSAs are doing and what they're doing for their qualifications. We had in there in your bullet point highlighted licensed professional. I know there's a lot of licensed professionals for a lot of licenses, but I'd have to learn from other areas and see what they're doing for what they think should be licensed.
Yeah, and that's the language that's presented in AB 1563.
Okay. I'll stop there and cover some of your bullet points. Appreciate the presentation.
Supervisor Holder?
I really appreciate all the work you put into this. For me, this is very frustrating. Probably no more than you. And I don't have any solutions for you. If you go vague, it's not enough. If you go specific, it's too much, and it puts us in a position of liability and singling people out and producers out, ag people, whatever. So we're stuck between a rock and a hard place. How do you... And this is always a moving target. there's no way to define this and make it stick. So we have to come up with something that's either always up for modification, just like the plan, that we can modify along with Sigma, the GSP. Or we have to make some kind of a code or an ordinance that we can constantly change. Because this is not, again, I use it all the time, this is not one size fits all. This is not something that you can say, this is going to work for everybody. Because I don't believe it will. And we're going to be stuck just like we always are with making an ordinance that we're going to have to rescind or change or do something with. And that's why I sit here with no comment, because I don't know what's going to work. There's a million questions in my head, but they're not solving anything. So that's my frustration, and I'll just stop there.
Supervisor Kossoff?
I'm in agreement along the indemnification. I don't know how we do that. I think that's impractical. I think the only way we can get around that is through the programmatic EIR. And I think the EIR is going to be countywide. I don't think it should be just basin by basin. It has to be countywide. Is there such a thing as a licensed professional that can even do this work? Because too often the state passes a law and there's nothing out there. So it doesn't even apply. But is there anybody like that?
Yeah, there are.
So, I mean, could they come to the Shasta Valley, which is volcanic in nature? It's not a basin, so who are we going to find? Somebody going to come in there and do that?
That's the big question.
I don't think so. Without doing, well, maybe the programmatic EIR would give them some cushion, I guess, is the bottom line. But I don't see that happening. And with regard to pending legislation, I think we need to monitor it and comment on how it would affect us or not, but mainly how it will affect us and if it's practical or not. And then just lastly, an observation. What amazes me is for well over 100 years when we had surface water going statewide, I won't call it perfect, but it was a lot better than when regulation got involved. And regulation is driving all of the water in stream, taking water off the current landscape, and is depriving that landscape of the groundwater recharge that it's always enjoyed and has been a particular benefit to wildlife and overall. So regulation is creating a man-made disaster as we go down this path. And they need to get over it and figure out what was working. Because this isn't, we were working fine until regulation entered the picture. And I'm not saying, again, that it wasn't perfect. Yes, there were some improvements that we needed to do, but most of what's coming down the pipe is more punitive than restorative. So I'll leave it at that.
So what's up?
I'll start with, I'd like to see the state subject to the public trust doctrine when it comes to what they're doing with respect to the stream flow. Number of things, the question of the EIR process and CEQA. Part of me wants to jump to that because, yes, in the short term, I think it's going to cost some money. In the long term, I think this other approach is going to cost more money because you're going to revisit every decision anyway.
Yeah.
And in the EIR, at least we get it out there. And we'll may or may not experience legal challenge rather than getting a legal challenge on every decision we make.
Right.
So that's kind of the way I look at that. I don't favor the certification on a domestic law. I can't go there. I can't go there primarily because in the language, on attachment A, exhibit A, what happens when a person starts a small business? Business use of that indemnification, or not, affidavit, if you will, is what you're having them sign, is not included. And I've got plenty of small businesses that are operating out of homes, popcorn sales, all kinds of, and it doesn't take just one nitpicking lawyer who thinks he can make money to start going after individuals, and I'm not going to have it. I approach with trepidation any involvement with the county regulation when it comes to replacing the adjudicated well. To me, that's a separation of powers argument between this legislative branch and the judicial branch. I know we have a process to go through, but God forbid we should ever step in and deny one. I don't favor the indemnity either because I don't have a Monsanto operating in the county. We have mom and pop's operations basically in the county, and they're being forced into our process. They're not asking us to come in and doing a process that they would do normally. So the indemnification just doesn't make sense to me. And I don't have a landowner that's capable of going through that. And I guess I'll leave it at that. You know, I got a ton of questions regarding this thing. We are so daggone far down the rabbit hole on this thing, making assumptions. We assumed Elf did this. We assumed Sigma did that, you know, and we just keep perpetuating things that haven't been proven. Yes, they went to court, but they didn't prove the science behind it. And even our modeling isn't backed up with radioactive type testing to prove that actually everything's connected to the river, you know. And I have yet to see, even in Scott Basin, that if everything is connected to the river, where's the elevation of water? Because I understand it's the perimeter of the valley that suffers water use in the groundwater. It's not down at the river. There's just so many things that we've assumed, and it's leading us down a rabbit hole that has no return. So maybe the EIR is the best way to go because of that.
So I do think the EIR is the best way to go long term. Short term, you take a front hit. It's, you know, again, Rick, I think we just had this conversation yesterday when I was doing some fact finding. You know, at the end of the day, this is going to get scrutinized. We were consistently going to get scrutinized, which is probably one of the reasons why a little bit disagreement on the indemnification. We're taking too much of the risk. And I will use the Elf Law Foundation lawsuit where we paid off. No one was there to help us out other than we took it in the shorts. I think there's a check and balance with the indemnification. You know, maybe we're in for half, something like that, because otherwise you're going to get people doing something and we'll get stuck holding the bag. But I'm not going to lose sleep over that. I'll see what the other two are going with that. I do think on the licensed professional, I think there should be a checks and balance there too. You just go down a criteria list. If there isn't one available, you go through a checklist. At the end of the day, you go common sense, practicality. So you couldn't find a hydrologist, you couldn't find a geologist, because there's no one local that's going to step up and do that. Well, why would they want to take on the risk?
And I asked the question, so there are licensed foresters, there's licensed engineers, and there's licensed geotechnical engineers, but is there a licensed hydrogeologist? I've never even heard of one.
It's a geologist with certification of hydrology.
Okay, so there are state standards.
Well, my concern is that they're going to be few and far between. They're not here, and you're going to just drive up the cost. So I think those are my initial thoughts. So I do have one public comment, Theodore Johnson, if you want to come up and give your thoughts here. Sorry, Wendy, we're going.
That's okay, but I need to comment on the correspondence when she's finished.
Yes, thank you.
Hello, I'm Theo Johnson, and I am on the Scott Valley GSP Advisory Committee. So I did get to give comments at our last meeting, but I knew this was such an important topic that I wanted to be here to hear how they were received and kind of see the direction that staff seems to be going. And it seems encouraging so far. I have some questions and I have some, a few comments. And I know you know the urgency of this, but right now nobody can even get a emergency replacement well. And how long has that been the case? And it's kind of a scary situation that our farmers and ranchers are in right now, where if something does need to be replaced, you could be losing an entire stand of alfalfa or, you know, something else along those lines. So I don't know how you deal with that, because I know you can't rush through this important process too quickly, but I guess one of the questions I had on process was whether, if the governor's executive orders are rescinded, or that a drought emergency is rescinded, I guess that's the same thing, I'm not sure, but if his orders are rescinded, would these guidelines still be needed based on the public trust issue we're up against, and you know, I guess the CEQA issues, and I guess with, we don't know what the pending legislation will do, but just with what we have to deal with right now, with these guidelines, could they just go away, given, you know, a rescinding of the executive orders? That's one question I have. And then if they are adopted and the executive order is rescinded somehow, then would they go away? So that was a question I had. I do know that our advisory committee for the GSP does want to see, and this was brought up multiple times, we do want to see the draft as it evolves. And we would like to know, it doesn't sound like there is a process that anybody is aware of that's we don't know what the process is, I guess, for adopting this, because we're so playing it by ear. But the advisory committee really wants to be kept in the loop on what that is and wants to be part of it. That's my read, anyway. I think that the Scott Valley Integrated Hydrologic Model, to me, it's kind of a mysterious creature. I've come in kind of late to all these water discussions, but I'm wondering if it's time for our advisory committee and possibly you all, I don't know what your comfort level with is on the your knowledge of that model, but I think I hear things all the time of, well, the model can do that, and I don't know what it can do and can't do, but maybe we're due for a good, thorough overview, possibly, in front of the advisory committees and this body. Okay.
You can wrap it up.
Okay, yes. Thank you. And, for example, the hydrogeologists. I was thinking during our advisory committee meeting, could the model replace the need for that? It seems like maybe it could, but I just don't know. I don't know whether anybody here knows. And I guess, finally, on the indemnity, I really appreciate Supervisor Haupt's comments. It's a really scary thought that we, individuals, would be opened up to a public trust kind of lawsuit or any other type of lawsuit just from trying to drill a well, just trying to go through this process that is already very burdensome.
Thank you.
And lastly, I guess on the EIRs, the different basins are so different. I just am curious how one EIR can address the very different hydrologic basins. But thank you.
Is there anyone online, Anna?
Sure, I'm online.
Okay.
Oh, I apologize.
Is there someone online? One.
Battery 100%. Caller ending in 0264. Is your turn to speak?
Hello, this is Nick Stiles from Mount Shasta, California. I'm speaking on behalf of the Mount Shasta Bioregional Ecology Center. We've been dissatisfied in the lack of opportunity for public participation while the county staff worked on developing guidance on well development countywide. Thank you to Supervisor Chris for expressing similar concerns. We remain concerned about aspects of the current guidance for well development in the county. Our concerns are outlined in the letter that we sent staff and supervisors earlier this week. We can be available to answer any questions you may have once you have read the letter. Thank you for your consideration of our concerns.
Can I get your name again?
Can we have your name one more time for the record, please?
Is this not I, I believe it. The name's Nick Trostler.
Was it Nick? Okay.
And then I'll just jump in here to clarify. I wasn't saying there hasn't been a public process yet. I just want to make sure there's a public process through it. Sorry if I was misunderstood on that. But I think there's been good public process going back to the GSAs. The GSAs have chance for public comment as well from the public. But I just wanted to, you know, continue.
Okay. Anyone else?
I heard somebody ask for my name again. It's Nick Joslin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Showing no others online.
Anyone else in house? Rep, anything?
I would just address Ms. Johnson. We do have process. So if there's an ag well that goes
because
down
and
we place,
so. Yeah.
We can deal with that.
Yeah, I think emergency is an
expedient
different beast.
Yeah.
Thank you for that clarification.
Quick follow-up with regard to, I mean, I know this, you know, in a perfect world, ideally, either with a programmatic EIR, but when that permit was issued, essentially that should indemnify that person that's putting that well in. There should be no challenge. If they've gone through a process and they follow the rules, they should be done versus they follow the rules, they drill a well, and then they're open for, you know, whatever comes.
Yeah. See, I think that's right. The difference is an existing well to me is a completely different piece. That's grandfathered in. When I think of indemnification, that's a brand new well they're putting in somewhere. It's got to go through a process. It's no different than if we were going to build an XYZ factory out there somewhere. It's got to go through that process, right?
Understood. I get that. But even at that, once they went through that process, that should be the end of it, once it's approved. Ideally.
I still think we're going to disagree here. To me, it's a new process.
Yeah. If
the existing is a completely...
I'm not
all,
talking about existing. I'm just talking about new wells.
Okay.
If they go through a process that we built and they've done everything right,
mm-hmm.
that should be the end of the game in the perfect world.
And then what you're willing to take the risk that they went through that process. Now the county's going to be beholden to whatever lawsuit, a la Elf Law Foundation.
I'm not.
Because that's what you're saying.
Well,
in my mind. We're taking the risk that something that we allow it. Now, I think we're mitigating the risk, by the way.
Well,
that's what we're on the hook for.
Well, I'm not saying it's right. I don't think it's right either.
I mean, I think
we shouldn't be on the risk, and neither should the guy that's going through it. I mean, that, you know, but we're in this litigation world, you know, and that's why that's my comment,
sure.
is that once they've gone through the process and done it right, it should be done on both sides, whether it's a county or the individual.
So, maybe if someone follows the process that we have determined, they need it and we make a decision, that's not on the individual.
Shouldn't
be. I don't think. Because whether to issue or not, we made the determination as a candidate. That's on us. Okay, two real quick follow-ups. I want to see how you're going to treat domestic multi-family wells. I have a number of them in Scott Valley because of limited water supplies where you might have four or five families sharing a well. Probably comes closer, exceeds a 2 acre feet piece, but I don't see that caveat in what we discussed today. The other is, as far as I'm concerned, any well for any illegal activity ought to be illegal, period. You have to think about illegal marijuana. Make it any illegal activity going forward.
A lot to be discussed.
Agreed. Yes, sir.
And just a note as we wrap this one up is the board did receive correspondence from two different people by email. Michael Stapleton, he's a member of the Scott Valley Groundwater Advisory Committee. and then also Nathaniel Kane with the Environmental Law Foundation. They commented on this item. And Rick, if I missed getting it to you, I can certainly send those to you.
Okay, when are you ready for five?
Definitely.
So just so everyone knows what the process is going to be, I'm going to go into the county budget after we come back. Hopefully we'll get that through fairly quick. Then we will go into closed session, and then we'll finish up the afternoon.